You're trying to create a new self, and you got to go through a little temporary period of confusion and temporary insanity and discomfort until you make that shift. And it's going to be scary and it's going to be difficult while you're in that transition. And many people go into it a little bit and they go, uh-oh, this isn't, and they back right out of it. And so they miss what I think are the really beautiful benefits of breath work, and that is the spiritual benefits, you know.
Oh, wow. You've just blown my mind a little bit there, Dan. Welcome to Take a Deep Breath. Today's Breathcast guest is Mr. Dan Brulé. If you don't know who Dan is, how could I best describe Dan? Dan has got 40 years' experience in the breathwork field, and he's known as the Bruce Lee of breathwork. So, what does that mean? It's a bit like the mixed martial arts of breathwork. What this person has done is he's been able to go out there, explore breathwork and all the different areas that it exists, and pull together the best of the best of the best. He advises Tony Robbins. If you don't know who Tony Robbins is, just do a quick Google, but he is a performance coach, probably arguably one of the top performance coaches in the world. He advises Tony on his breathing. And Tony teaches breath work to millions of people when he does his seminars. Dan, it was an absolute pleasure to sit down with this man, this legend of breathing. And what a humble, beautiful soul that I got to sit down and talk with as well. He's in Mexico, so the video signal's not great, but the audio is really good. So you can listen and you can still see him on the screen. But I think you're going to get a lot of value from this. I actually went out to you guys on YouTube and asked if you had any questions, and I've taken some of those questions and put them in to this as well. So you're going to get some of your own questions in there as well. But Dan is somebody that I've been wanting to speak to for such a long time. He is a absolute force of good. You meet people on this planet, don't you, that are trying to make the world a better place. And Dan's one of those people. You just get that feeling. I just wanted to spend so much time. I just want to go and live with him. I just want to go and move to Mexico and live with Dan and just learn breath from Dan all the time. So here is an hour of Dan. I really hope you enjoy that. Just before we get stuck in, a couple of quick messages. So this podcast is brought to you in conjunction with our other YouTube channel, which is called Hypnotherapy Unleashed. I don't know why I'm doing that because there's no text there. But Hypnotherapy Unleashed, which is also on YouTube. You're here, you're interested in breath work, you're interested probably in de-stressing, relaxing, reducing anxiety, all those wonderful things that we get through conscious breathing. Well, actually, you can unlock some of that stuff with hypnotherapy. And we have a channel which has over 50 videos now, which goes into addictions, anxiety, depression, procrastination, and a whole host of other things. And there's new content coming out every single week, sometimes multiple bits of content. So if you've not already subscribed to that channel, if you could do me a favor, go over there, click that button, subscribe, because I think you'll get a lot of value from what's going on over there. So thank you so much if you could do that. And if you want to follow me on Instagram, it's takeadeepbreath.co.uk, and we're putting regular content on there as well. It's another way that we can reach ourselves as a community, interact with each other, and share the wonderful power of breath work. Now, it's my absolute pleasure to introduce you to Mr. Dan Brulé. Take it away. Cheers. Dan, thank you so much for coming on the Take a Deep Breath podcast. It's a pleasure to be talking with you. I actually went out to my audience on the YouTube channel, and I've got some questions which we can dip into a little bit later as well. I've been thinking, what would be a good first question for you? And I think this is what I'm going to go with. I would love to know your thoughts on why you think humans have this power of conscious breath, or what you call an invitation. Why do you think we have this gift to consciously breathe amongst all these other animals?
Yeah, well, they say, you know, the we have bigger brains. But I think it has to do more with the nature of existence and in our essence, which is consciousness, which is energy. And when we get a handle on our breath, we're getting a handle on our consciousness and our energy. And we, unlike other, you know, critters, are not bound by our programming or as much. We are more creative, inventive. You know, we're probably the highest expression of matter on the planet at the moment. the human body. And if we jump to what is ultimately going to be proven as true, and that is that consciousness is primary, you know, this medical and scientific question about how did consciousness evolve from the brain, from matter? They're never going to answer that question because it's the other way around. The body evolved out of consciousness. Matter evolved out of energy and consciousness. And so I think we're on a cusp of a really great awakening, or maybe just a shift of some kind on the human level. Evolution, we're about to take another leap, and evolution has been building up and building up. And I think we're just... we're on a path, on an infinite, eternal path of expansion and awakening and development, and it seems to me that the breath is a main key to that evolution, that development these days. So,
yeah, wow. I'm curious. Do you ever get? I'm sure you do. When you feel frustration or do you feel anger? Are you able to catch yourself these days, or are you still living, as we all are, this very human experience where we all are flawed and make problems? I'm curious to know, how does Dan ever get angry?
Oh, hell yeah. I have moments, let's say, very intense moments that come and go quickly. I don't carry a lot of stuff. Something comes up, I get it out right there, right then, and then it's over with, and so the little fewer and fewer things have the power to push my buttons. I have fewer and fewer buttons. I have more and more moments of choice where I think other people are already kind of driven, but you know, anger is an emotion and that's involved in chemistry. And so once these chemicals have been, you know, activated, they have to run their course, which only takes a minute or two. So I think if anything like that exists for more than a couple of minutes, the original impulse is no longer the cause. We are giving it a life of its, it wasn't meant to have. We are keeping it alive by our thoughts, by our habits, by our emotions, and all of that stuff comes under the cover of choice. And so I think more and more we can choose how we feel. And if it's in the moment, it doesn't seem like we can choose how we feel because our feelings are just there. We can choose how we relate to them, how we think about them, what we do with the energy that they contain. So I think, you know, we're always growing, but I you got to try really hard to piss me off these days. I mean, you got to try really hard. I've cleared away a lot of stuff, and it just, you know, I have a feeling that when we get angry, for example, there's an old original anger that keeps getting reactivated and re-triggered by other things. And once we release that original anger, then there's nothing there to be triggered anymore. And so unless we're actually generating the energy of anger, and I think I do that from time to time as a device, it's convenient, it's useful. If people think you're really angry, they'll get out of your way or they'll stop what they're doing to you. But on the inside, it's kind of a game. My younger son discovered that in me when he was very young, you know, and I'm trying to be the father. Listen to your mother, do what she says. And he goes, what are you going to do? Hit me. Like he just knew, you know, that no matter how angry I sounded, that there was this love underneath. And
yes.
That's always there. And I say all the other stuff seems to come and go. But who we really are, you know, we can forget, we can get pulled out of it from time to time by different things, but we find our way. I'm like a horse, like a pigeon. You know, I can find my way home. My system by itself finds its way back to the barn, you know, by itself. If I just let go, take a breath.
Yeah.
And already I'm returning to my center. If we practice on purpose, you know, in my relationships that you mentioned anger, I mean, there were times when it was, you know, it was days later and I was looking back and going, oh God, what did I say? What did I do? And you kind of wake up sooner and sooner. Sometimes you wake up right after you said something or did something and it's not too late to kind of clean up the mess. And then I began to catch myself in the middle of it. And I could rechannel the energy. And then now I can, you know, I'm aware of it as it comes up, and I can I can do something with immediately. And that's emotional state management, right? I mean, that's something that everybody ought to learn, because it, you know, if nothing else, we all have to learn a certain amount of that. If I'm paying you to be a grocery clerk, I want you to smile at my customers. I don't care if you had a fight with your wife or something's bothering you. You're on the job. You smile. You have a nice attitude. And so we know how to manage our emotions when we have to. And we can get really good at that. You know, really, really good at that.
There was something, I was on a course many years ago, and they talked about stimulus and the response that you make. But in between those two things, you have a choice. And that was a real game changer for me, because I thought, no, if someone makes me mad, I get mad. But actually, I've got that decision of what I do next. And that really blew my mind. I was going to ask you,
how do we frame it? What meaning do we give it? How do we look at it? That event and our experience of the event, there's a big thing in the middle that determines our experience, and it ain't the event, right? You got it,
it's
man.
It's the choice. Wonderful. I want to ask you about crying and breathing when people cry. I don't know if you, I'm sure you've got some experience. And the reason I ask you this is when you look at somebody that's crying, you know, there's a lot going on there. But also, and this is a bit of a strange tangent, I was in the bath the other day, and that's when I do my best thinking. And I was feeling quite tense. And I was doing a few different breathing techniques. And one thing I did is, I don't know if you, have you ever seen Godfather 3, where Michael's daughter dies at the end, and Michael lets out this big scream and his mouth's open. So I was in the bath and I just went, like, I can't even do it now, but I was like, it was almost like I was crying. It was like a silent cry using my mouth. And it just released a load of energy, a load of emotion came out. So I would love to hear your thoughts on crying and releasing emotion that way.
Yeah, well, I make people cry everywhere I go. Sooner or later, somebody ends up melting and releasing. You know, I mean, you know, that's a baby's first and only language, right? And we have to decipher whether the crying means I'm hungry, I'm cold, I'm wet, I'm lonely, I want to be alone, I'm, you know. And hopefully our mother is psychic enough to translate that one into, you know, whatever the specific thing is. Crying is the system's best way it's got to deal with cortisol, to, you know, to just to deal with the activation until we teach our system an easier, better way, which is bringing the breath into it. And when you have a good laugh, the breath is being shaken up. And when you have a good sobbing cry, the breathing mechanism is being shaken up. And so I teach people to kind of bring those things together, as you kind of intuitively caught there, right? So we, you know, during a breathing session, for example, we encourage people to breathe. But if crying starts, you don't stop breathing to cry and you don't stop crying to breathe. You just allow everything to come together naturally. And it really does. You, you know, this squeezing kind of a, that's an exhale. And it's like a squeezing, and following that should be a very big natural inhale. And so we just encourage people to just bring the breath into those moments when they are, when their system is doing the best it can to deal with whatever is coming up, and we can repattern our system to find a more efficient way, more economical, faster, more powerful. And the breath is the key to that. So, that's personal observation on your part. And it's a really important lesson. And then it just becomes, okay, now this is, there's like a new skill that I could develop. I can learn how to use my breath to do what crying does, or shouting does, or, you know, and we start to up-level some of our immature reactions, you might say.
I was with Wim Hof in 2016, and I did about a 90-minute breath session with him in a group of 20 people. And I had the biggest emotional release. You know, there was laughing and crying. And I just want to get your thoughts on the West. And maybe it's not the West. Maybe it's just civilization today. How I know I can speak for me in the UK. We don't cry enough, I don't think. We suppress this emotion of crying, and then we wonder why when somebody dies we're just a complete mess, because it's just this emotion that's and I feel that even now that I need a good cry, but it's like almost a constipation sometimes that you can't get it out. But again, you've got all this experience. It'd be good to know kind of your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, from the typical male thing, of course, you know, you don't want to show that you're weak. You're not going to be a crybaby, you know, big boys don't cry. You know what I mean? So much conditioning and programming.
Yeah.
And, you know, just there's the fear of shame. And, I we've got so much stuff in the way of something very, very natural and very healthy. And some of our social conditioning or our personal family conditioning can make some people's case a lot heavier than others.
Yes.
I've been with a lot of people who've cried for the first time in years and years. And some people manage to somehow stuff all that stuff down, and it doesn't seem to get in the way of their everyday life. Mm-hmm. But as soon as some major event happens, then they fall apart. So like you said, this stuff is built up and it's just waiting for a chance to come out. And, yeah, you know, road rage and so many things, you know, I mean, the times when I was violent in my life, that person that I was particularly violent to in that moment was receiving all the anger that a lot of people before them should have gotten and didn't. Mm. And then that poor bugger got the brunt of it all. So, yeah, you know, we're human. We're divine.
Yes.
But we're also human. So,
yeah. Yeah. It's funny to hear you say bugger, by the way, because I thought that was a very British thing. It's not very often I hear Americans say, oh, bugger. When did you first become aware of your breath? Can you remember a time when you suddenly were aware you had this power of conscious breathing?
Yeah. In kindergarten, first grade in Catholic school. Yeah. And the first time this priest came to our class, every Friday, the priest would tour all the classrooms. And on that first week of school, you know, it's like, you're in a strange place. The, you know, nuns with these big pie plates and a giant stainless steel heart hanging from their chest and big giant rosary beads that hanging from their waist go down to the ground. They're dressed in black, and all you see is this part of their face, and the rest of them is, you know, for a little 4 or 5 year old kid, this is like, whoa. And then when the priest came in, even the nun became one of the kids. She actually literally sat in the class with the kids while the priest was up front, and I'm looking on. She sat on the side of me, and all of a sudden was like, oh, she's like one of us all of a sudden. Who is this guy, you know?
Yeah.
And so that, you know, childlike innocence and so on. And he talked about Genesis and the first book of the Bible and how God took dust of the earth and formed the body of man and breathed into the nostrils of man the breath of life, and man became a living soul. That was the most exciting thing I had ever heard in my life. And it was like, I couldn't understand why everybody wasn't excited. Like, okay, God is breathing into me. God is breathing into me. Wah, wah, wah. And I don't know, something, a spark of some kind. And then I had I had several near drowning experiences. Right. I got the wind knocked out of me several times as a kid in the schoolyard and fell off a building onto a fence and knocked the wind out of me and got punched in my solar plexus. And so I don't know, I was awakened to this relationship that I had to the breath and how precious it was, but how it could be taken from me at any moment and how it had all this potential, these amazing possibilities. So I was turned on really young. And then every job I ever had stuck my nose back in the breathing. I was an X-ray chest x-rays, telling people to take in a deep breath, hold it, and click, you take their picture. And now I'm observing other people's breathing, and I'm realizing, wow, everybody has a unique relationship to their breath, and it's an expression and a reflection of their relationship to their body, to themselves, to life, and to the world. And it was just the breath just started speaking to me. And then when I went in the military, I went into deep sea diving. So I was practicing breath holding. I was mixing gases for diving. When you're a topside tender, you're listening to the guy down below breathe. And I could tell if they were stressed, if they're in the zone, I could coach them to remind them to breathe from the surface. And so it seemed like every job I ever had just kept bringing me back to the breath until I realized I'm not going to go anywhere else. This is why I was born. This is why I'm here. Who knows anything about breathing? I'm going to be kissing your feet or breathing down your neck until I can get what I can get from you. And then I'm going to move on to the next flower and extract whatever pollen I can from that teacher. And this has been happening since 1970, I guess, wow. You know? And
yeah. That's incredible. What do you make of the last, say, decade or two when it comes to breath work? Are you seeing that it just seems to be exponentially getting more and more popular now? What do you put that down to?
Definitely. It's the tool of our day. Mm. 40 years ago, I felt like a voice crying out in the desert. I mean, I literally got laughed out of the room when I was in the military when I was trying to talk about conscious breathing and breath awareness and yoga, shmoga, meditation, shmeditation. Nobody wanted to hear it. Breathing, what do we have to learn? What is it to breathe? Nothing to learn, blah. You know, it was really tough to crack. Mm-hmm. But science has caught up, and there's no doubt anymore, breathing patterns, habits and patterns in breathing affect your physiology, affect your emotions, affect your psychology. And so I guess because of the awareness of the medical scientific world about some of the unarguable benefits, they resisted as long as they could, but then they couldn't resist the evidence anymore. So they actually got in the game. And now with wearable technologies, everything's accelerating. And I think it's one more piece of evidence that we're on the edge of a big shift, either a big breakdown or a big breakthrough.
Yes.
And we're being called to become more conscious, more aware. And the more conscious I am of my breathing, the more conscious I am of my body, my thoughts, my reactions, the effect I have on other people, the effect of my words. So the more conscious I become of my breathing, the more conscious I'm becoming, period. And I think that is the next step in evolution, is a big shift or a leveling of consciousness. And the breath is a key part of that. It's one of the mechanisms through which consciousness is awakened and is expanded and is refined, is through breathwork practices. You become aware of subtle energies. You become aware and more conscious of patterns and habits and structures and mechanics and physiology and all of that. More and more people are getting on it. And so there's an acceleration. I think I have seen an acceleration for sure.
Yes.
In the breathing world in the last 10 years, especially.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Where do you think that takes us? Where, if you were to look forward, say, another 10 years, any ideas where you think we're heading with this journey?
Well, I think a lot of the ancient spiritual wisdom, which is a natural wisdom most people have, we're moving towards a real realization of that. For example, we are all connected. Mm-hmm. It's getting really, really hard not to accept the fact that we're all connected. The only reason that violence and war is even possible is because I don't feel my connection to those other people, that other tribe, that other group. You know, there's us and there's them. But that us and them is a part of me. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about breath work, is that awakens in us this connection that we all have with each other. And breathing is the connection between my mind and my body. It's the connection between my conscious mind and my unconscious mind. And it's the connection between me and life and the source of life. I mean, the breath that's in me now was in one of the birds over here a few minutes ago, and it's going to be in the cat tomorrow. We're sucking off the same bubble of air on this planet. Yeah. Everything that breathes is sharing a common connecting factor. And that's consciousness, that's energy, whatever you want to call it, spirit, life itself. And I think we're waking up to that. We are maturing as a species. We are slowly evolving. And every once in a while, we take a big leap. And I think we're approaching one of those big leaps, and many people are already having it on a personal level. And at some point, when enough individuals have awakened to something, then everybody awakens to it. You know, just everything just shifts. Yeah. So I have a friend who's got a T-shirt that says, "I'm pissing off the world one person at a time." And if I had a T-shirt, I would say, "I'm waking up the world one person at a time."
Fantastic.
And all you got to do is wake people up to their breath, and they begin to wake up to themselves, and they wake up to whatever is next for them. It's really a beautiful place to be. It's a beautiful job to have, to just turn people on to the power of the breath, which is the power of the human spirit in them. And then what do they need me for? You know, you connect somebody to the God in themselves. What do they need anybody else for? And so I love how empowering breath work is. And I love how breath work is a part of this acceleration of human evolution and the raising of human consciousness. You know, we're going to outgrow. Why have people been fighting over the same damn things for thousands of years? When are we going to grow out of some of this stuff? You know, I think we're about to grow out of some of that stuff.
Oh, that's exciting. I really feel like James Nestor's title, you know, The New Science of a Lost Art. I feel like he really got that title so good, because it's like people have known about this. And actually, I did an interview with him just as the book came out. And I've had so many people go, "Yeah, we've known about this for years in India or in, you know, other countries."
Nice.
And you guys are just talking about it now. So it's this awakening, isn't it, to something that we probably already did really well many, many years ago. And it's kind of catching on now. So, no, it's an exciting time. Really,
there's another guy you might want to tune into is Stephen Elliott, whose book is called The New Science of Breath. The original science of breath was by Ramacharaka, this turn of the century Westerner, became a yogi, wrote Science of Breath. And Stephen Elliott, I was turned on by Ramacharaka when I was a teenager.
Yes.
He was turned on by Ramacharaka, and he called his new book The New Science of Breath, because he can incorporate now all of the science and stuff and start to put real legs under these practices that are ancient yogic practices that were just based on intuition and faith and so on. But now you got some very solid legs under the yoga table that explains a lot and helps us. And it saves us a lot of time, because, you know, the whole trial and error kind of thing, where you practice something for years before you figure out you got to tweak it. Now with real-time biofeedback, you can tweak your practice and save a lot of time. So that's contributing to the acceleration.
Right, wonderful. I'll check him out. Simon Elliott. Okay, I'll have a look at that after this. Thank you. So when I've watched some of your, because I did some preparation for this interview, and you do these nice breaths often, are you doing that to demonstrate the breath, or are you doing that to balance yourself? What are you doing there, Dan?
You know, it's like if you practice, like, so if I start to get upset or my bliss gets dented, I trained and practiced taking breaths at those moments to redirect my energy, to deal with what's happening. And it becomes a habit of your system. The more you practice something, the more it becomes second nature. So now, if, for example, if some tension starts building up in my body and I'm aware of the tension, I'm going to use my breath and vent that tension. But as what I'm learning is that the breath itself is catching that tension and it's releasing it before I'm even aware of it. Or I'm in a beautiful state and I start to kind of fall down out of that state. My breath, it interferes with the flow of my breath. And so my breath tries to clear away for itself. And I did that consciously often enough. So my system is just taking it on as a natural strategy.
Okay.
In the same way that if I see something coming towards my head, I automatically duck. I don't even have to think about it.
Yeah.
And so when my bliss gets dented or tension or anxiety builds up in my system, my breath automatically responds because I've trained it to do that. Now I don't have to think about it so much. So I do it for pleasure. It just feels good.
Yeah.
You know, there are pleasure receptors in the stretching of the muscles and the rib cage. And when you deliberately trigger that, It just feels good, organic pleasure. And so my system has learned to use my breath to keep itself in a certain state, in a certain zone. And I conspire with it. If it's not happening fast enough or enough, I jump into the game and I turbocharge it. But I can trust my system now. You know, if you start to get cold, you automatically put a blanket on. If you start to get hot, you automatically take your shirt off. And if you start to get anxious, your breathing automatically starts to work for you. That's all.
Okay. So I've completed the Oxygen Advantage instructor's course, and I'm almost completed on Buteyko, both under Patrick McEwen. And obviously, I know the power of the nose, or I think I've got a grasp of the power of the nose and all the wonderful things it does. But my question to you is, why does it feel so good to go out through the mouth? Why is that so much more satisfying than using the nose?
Yeah. Well, it's a bigger opening. It allows a release with less resistance. And the sound is a sound of pleasure. It's a sound of relaxation. And if you are also incorporating that Ujjayi sound, that stimulates the vagus nerve, it adds even more to it. But everybody you mentioned, Buteyko, Oxygen Advantage, and that end of the spectrum, that's, you're on one end of the spectrum with all those similar approaches and schools and styles, right? There's the other end of the spectrum, which you actually go, you have a temporary imbalance physiologically, chemically, because that's not your focus. That's not the benefit you're after. When you get into the other end of the spectrum, spiritual, transformational, you can send your body out of whack physiologically, temporarily, but it's a small price to pay to uncover some powerful, powerful spiritual power, or to enter into a beautiful state that you couldn't access through nose breathing, breath control, breath holding. I mean, one of the reasons that Wim Hof's method is so powerful, I mean, it's not unique at all. I mean, it's unique. It's ancient. He just found his way to it. Tummo and some Taoist practices and yogic hyperventilation practices and so on. And he just found his way to it. But one of the reasons his method is so powerful is because it combines hyperventilation and breath holding. And most people on the breath holding side, they're not into hyperventilation. And most people on the hyperventilation side, they're not into the breath holding. And he brought up both. Because when you hold your breath, you produce a whole package of feelings and sensations and emotions and chemical changes and so on. And if you can relax in the presence of them, you grow, you heal something. And when you hyperventilate, you generate an entirely different package of feelings and sensations and emotions and chemical reactions and so on. And if you can relax in the presence of that, you grow. You heal something. So it's a no-brainer going back and forth between hyperventilation, which he doesn't like to call it that anymore because hyperventilation has a bad rap.
Yes.
But it's hyperventilation. Let's be honest. You know, when you're hyperventilating, it's okay to call it hyperventilation because there's nothing bad about it. It's actually, it's a way for spiritual purification, for detoxing. It's a way to expand your comfort zone. And so it's good. And we need to get comfortable with the symptoms of hyperventilation and not be afraid of them in the same way that we need to get comfortable with the symptoms of a higher CO2. There's nothing dangerous about that. It feels really dangerous. If you hold your breath for 30 seconds, you think you're going to die. Meanwhile, your oxygen is still 97% blood saturated. So you are in no real danger. This is about growth. This is about awakening. This is about moving out of old patterns and habits and old ideas about stuff. And breathing gets people into that game really fast.
Yes, no, I love that. And I was listening to some of your audiobook the other day and how you said people call you the Bruce Lee of breathwork. And I love that. And I only heard that this week, because one of my goals in life was to become, I was saying, I want to become a mixed martial artist of breathwork. And I want to then move up the belts because, you know, I've done Wim Hof, I've done Bateka, I've done, but there's all these things that sit in between and it's so exciting. And like you were just saying, you can be on one scale or the other, but I think it's about looking at all of it and going, which bits do I want to play with or do I want to use for my therapy right now? That's how I feel. And I was going to ask you if you could maybe explain a little bit about what you've coined breath therapy and what that means and how you came to that name and what you do there.
Well, because I was doing rebirthing. I started with rebirthing and 1976 I had my first rebirthing session, and I had just gotten out of the military Vietnam era. I was suffering from the same thing that a lot of guys, post-traumatic stress. You did shit that you wish you hadn't done. You saw things that you just could never forget. And how do you live with it and so on? And you took on certain habits and postures that work really well in that environment. But when you go back home and you're in normal world and you're still using those strategies that were designed to cope with something that you're not having to deal with anymore, a lot of guys never make the transition. They never make it out. They self-medicate, slow or rapid suicide. They manage somehow to just suppress it so deeply that it kind of kills them from the inside, but they don't know what's happening. And then they die in their 50s or, you know, in their 60s. Anyway, so I came out of that. I was teaching rebirthing, but I was on the campus of the University of Massachusetts, and it was just a little too woo-woo. There was no scientific stuff. There was no psychiatric credentials. It was like pop psychology, and nobody wanted to listen. So I just changed the name. I called it breath therapy because it just sounded more mainstream than rebirthing. What's that, you know? And it also was very practical because in my understanding, breath therapy, there are two main concepts. One is that the breathing mechanism, the breathing system in the average person is not functioning anywhere near optimal or peak or fully natural. It's been inhibited. It's been damaged. The breathing mechanism in the average person has been damaged by shocks and traumas and by modeling behaviors that aren't natural and so on. And so the breathing mechanism itself needs therapy. It needs to be liberated. It needs to be restored to natural full functioning. And that's the first idea of breath therapy, is that restoring the breath to its full, free, natural, optimal function. But somewhere along the line, going towards that, we've healed the breathing mechanism enough that it can become a therapeutic tool. So I can use my breath and my body to heal my mind. I can use my breath and my mind to heal my body. And so breathing literally becomes one more therapeutic tool or intervention that can replace talk therapy. I mean, you can breathe out more in an hour than you can talk out in a year. And, you know, you can beat into a pillow, "I hate you, mommy, you killed me, you blah, 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 blah." You know, you can vent and release a lot of that stuff through those methods. But breathing is such a clean and pure and direct way to release and vent all that stuff that could take much longer. And the other stuff comes with side effects, you know, that breathing doesn't come with. So that's the second element of breath, is that once you heal the breathing mechanism, then the breath becomes a therapeutic tool. And so that, in a nutshell, is breath therapy for me. And there are hundreds, if not thousands, of breath therapy techniques. You know, you can breathe in for 5 seconds, out for 5 seconds. You can hold your breath. You can lengthen the inhale, lengthen the exhale, shift from your nose to your mouth, breathe high in your chest, breathe low in your belly. There are so many specific techniques that you can use to crack open all kind of issues and to release all kinds of physical toxins, mental toxins, to regain some balance and restore some natural balance. So all those different techniques are part of breath therapy, but the main idea of breath therapy is that the breathing mechanism is not functioning at its full free potential. And the sooner we get that healed, the sooner we can heal other stuff. And once we heal the breathing mechanism, we find a way to creatively use our breathing, conscious breathing and breath awareness, to address other issues on other levels.
Yes.
So it's therapy. It's not, well, it's not therapy, but it's therapeutic, let's say.
It's healing. It's definitely. So yeah. When I sat down with Dr. Belissa Varanich, she noticed that my breathing was not very functional. This was last summer. And so we spent some time after the Zoom conversation and she helped me out a little bit. But I'm still struggling personally with gut sucking. I've been gut sucking for 35 years, Dan, and I'm not sure how to really break that pattern. So I'd love to get any thoughts that you've got, because even I notice it mostly when I'm standing and I become conscious. I'm like, oh my God, I'm sucking my gut in, and I let it go again, but then it will go back into being sucked again. And so I can't seem to break that habit. So I don't know if you have any advice there. We'd love to hear it.
Well, old fashioned rebirthing breath work, right? The principle, the original discovery or realization in the rebirthing was that very early in life, I mean, starting in the womb, certainly at birth, when we're going from the womb to the world, and in early infancy and childhood, that's when we lay down all of our habits and patterns and strategies and our identity, and we draw conclusions about the world and about ourselves and about others, and it runs us from an unconscious level. And there's just no way to get to that. Because it's, you can't use the same mind that balances your checkbook to try to get out of that mind, you know. And so breathing, just using literally the spiritual power of the breath to clean and clear some of that early stuff that we're not even conscious of. We don't remember. And even if we could remember it, we can't put it into language that allows us to realize it's a memory. It's just like an unconscious belief. It's an unconscious pattern that's just controlling our energy before we have anything to say about it, right? Mm-hmm. It's causing us to do things and not do things before we're even aware that we're doing and not doing. It's something deeper. And you can't get to that stuff by depending on all these physiological parameters. So if all of my breathing training is about getting my physiology perfectly in tuned, what about my emotional body? I don't just have a physical body. I got an emotional body. I got a mental body. I got a heart. I got a spiritual body. And that is not being addressed by the physiological parameters that I'm trying to keep in place. And just the opposite. It stabilizes me. Like diaphragmatic breathing is a good example. And Belissa, I don't know if there's a better teacher of diaphragmatic breathing in the world or in America, but she's definitely got it. She knows how to teach diaphragmatic breathing, her understanding of lateral versus vertical and so on. And I mean, she's really got it. And breathing in the lower portion and not using accessory muscles and all that stuff is really important. It's economical efficiency. You get more bang for your buck. Instead of having to take 10 breaths, you can take 2 breaths and you get more benefit, right? So, but diaphragmatic breathing will not trigger transformation. Diaphragmatic breathing is a stabilizing pattern. It's grounding, it's anchoring, it's balancing. And if what we need is transformation, that ain't going to help us. You need to get out of the belly, get up into the upper chest, and move what moves when you cry and you laugh, and get the breath up into these higher spaces, which for physiological purposes are not very efficient, but for emotional growth and working with unconscious habits of the system, there's no way except to break out of diaphragmatic breathing, get up into your chest where your lungs are, where your emotions live around your heart, and start activating that area and surrendering to what comes up. And that's old-fashioned rebirthing. You know, the hardest people 40 years ago when I started teaching rebirthing breath work, the hardest people were the people who had done a lot of yogic breathing training. You just couldn't get them out of their damn belly. And when you breathe down in your belly, you have this phenomenon where you're actually stuffing things deeper and deeper inside of you. And yeah. it's not until you invite the breath to come up and, yeah. you know, and really start to overflow. But that's very scary.
Yeah.
And so Barnett Bain has a really beautiful hit on understanding this. He teaches the same thing that, hey, diaphragmatic breathing is necessary. It's healthy. It should be your unconscious habit. But if you want to be, if you want to disrupt something, you can't use diaphragmatic breathing to disrupt it. And if you want to transform something or move to another level, you're not going to do it with diaphragmatic breathing. You're going to keep doubling down on the level you're at. It'll get broader and wider, but you ain't going to go higher. And literally, if you want to go higher in terms of consciousness, you literally need to bring the breathing up out of those lower three chakras and get up into the higher chakras with the breath so you can actually start to up level and raise your consciousness and raise your energy. And that's very scary to the body because the body likes to feel like it's grounded to the earth. And it likes to feel like it's, you know, it's solid. And as soon as you start to go into the other place, your body system reacts. And that's when you got to talk to your body. Look, thank you. I know you're upset, but just hang on for a little while. You're going to feel better when this is over. Just like you talk to a kid who needs to take medicine. And and so we got to get to that other end of the spectrum of the transformational spiritual part of it. And the hell with the science and the hell with the chemistry and the heck with all that physiological stuff. It ain't going to go away. You'll come back to that. And you might come back to it with a new awareness that allows you to go even deeper into that. So, you know, Stig Severinsen is a good example of that, right? If you were to take his physiological, biological markers when he's holding his breath, you would think, oh my God, stop whatever you're doing. This is not healthy. This is not right. But when you're trying to break through a limit, you can't be responding to the chemical triggers and regulators from the old self. You're trying to create a new self. Yeah. And you got to go through a little temporary period of confusion and temporary insanity and discomfort until you make that shift. And it's going to be scary and it's going to be difficult while you're in that transition. And many people go into it a little bit and they go, uh-oh, this isn't, and they back right out of it. And so they miss what I think are the really beautiful benefits of breath work. And that is the spiritual benefits, you know?
Yeah. Oh, wow. You've just blown my mind a little bit there, Dan, because when I was doing the Wim Hof retreat, which was about 5 days, I was a real bad chest breather. They told me off because I was doing too much chest breathing. But I had a very, very psychedelic experience where I had a vision. I communicated with a being. I had all these different colours. I was crying. I was laughing. We had really, really. I've just summarized a week into a few senses, which obviously is not good. But I had a very, very powerful experience. Now, fast forward to a couple of years later, I went to what is called biodynamic breathwork, which I think is just an offshoot of holotropic. I was belly breathing because I was like, I'm a belly breather. And I didn't get any emotional release. And I thought, oh, maybe there's nothing wrong with me now. But inside, I knew I had some emotions that didn't come out. So if I'm just summarizing what you're saying, when it comes to that end of the scale, the TUMO, the Wim Hof, the holotropic, the biodynamic, really we should be aiming more for chest. And would that also be mouth as well then?
Yeah. In general, yes. It's not that you're not breathing in the belly. It's that you're just the belly's included, you know, unless the belly's frozen. Some people just, their belly's frozen and they can't breathe in their belly. Other people, their chest is frozen and they can't breathe in their chest. So it's not so much what you do, it's what's happening inside of you while you're doing it. It's how you're doing it. So you could have been practicing chest breathing your whole life, but that chest breathing was combined with some unconscious fear. It was combined with some unconscious tension and contraction. And so just to say that you were chest breathing really says nothing, right? So in the same way that, you know, if you know about coherent breathing and the heart math people, 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out, that particular breathing pattern has so many medical scientific studies, it's unarguable, increases heart rate variability, lowers cortisol, lowers heart rate, blood pressure, unarguable benefits. But if you just think in terms of 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out, 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out, That's not enough. What if I'm breathing in 5 seconds, but I'm tensing every muscle in my body while I'm doing it? And what if while I'm breathing out, I'm imagining all the worst, horrible things I could imagine? The particular breathing pattern is almost useless. It's irrelevant because the other factors are so much more powerful, right? So, you know, breathing with awareness comes first. That's one of my first pillars. You got to be conscious of not just the particular breathing technique you're doing, but how are you approaching it? What mindset? And what's the state of your relaxation in relationship to the breathing? And what's happening in your head while you're breathing? Those things can outpower any breathing technique in the same way that certain breathing techniques can outpower those psychological habits, those physical tensions. You know, you can use breathing like a Roto-Rooter. You can just go through and clean your pipes with it. And so, you know, there are different approaches and different styles and different methods and different schools. And some people, they have an entry point into breath work and they think that's everything. That's all of it. And there's a whole, you know, there's 1,000 Wim Hofs out there. Not to put Wim down. I love him. I've known him forever. I knew him before, you know, anybody knew him. And so, you know, there's so much to breath work and it's so subjective on one hand. You know, for example, any scientist, any medical person will tell you when you inhale, the heart speeds up. When you exhale, the heart slows down. And that's, it just happens. But with practice, you can make the opposite happen. And so, you know, there's this consciousness factor, I call it, right?
Yes.
That kind of trumps physiology. It trumps chemistry. It trumps mechanics. And it even can trump unconscious patterns. This, you know, and so it's about raising our consciousness, expanding our consciousness. And if you're in the breathing world, you wouldn't want to take that principle and expand your breath awareness. You know, you would want to wander off into other styles and techniques and methods and not camp out in one place. At least for me, that's why Tony Robbins, other people call me the Bruce Lee of breathing.
Yeah,
because I am not loyal to any tradition. Yeah. It's not my purpose in life to pass on a tradition that's pure, that I don't add anything to it. I don't take anything away from it. Just the opposite. I go crashing into a church and I make noise and I question authorities and I invent stuff and I'm a disruptor.
Yes.
And that's not everybody's way. But I think it's necessary, especially these times, because you know, when something keeps happening over and over and over again, maybe, you know, what Einstein said, you can't solve the problem with the same mind that created the problem. We got to just do anything. It may not be comfortable. It may not be right. It may not be good, but at least you're out of the box. And now there's a possibility that you could see something you never saw before or realize something you never realized before because you're not in incestuous relationship with your own beliefs and thoughts all the time or habits of your system, you know?
Yes. Wow. You mentioned Tony there. So I would love to know, how did you get to know Tony and what is it like to coach arguably one of the greatest coaches in the world?
Yeah. No, I mean, he started the life coaching business for God's sakes. He's like the father. He called me. He just called me out of the blue one day. And I had met his son, Jarek, at the Seal Fit Training Center in San Diego. I have a good friend there, Mark Devine, former Navy SEAL commander. And I just happened to bump into him and I go, you know, you look a lot like Tony Robbins. You even talk like anybody you talk. He goes, yeah, that's my dad. Oh, okay, that explains it. So anyway, I gave him a session and we had a conversation. I gave him a little coaching while I was there. And I guess he put a bug in Tony's ear about me and a few weeks passed and suddenly Tony just called me up and I thought it was a joke, really, you know. He goes, hey, is this Dan Berlay? Tony Robbins. Get the fuck out of here. You're like, who is this really? Is this Josh? Is this my brother? Is this Paul? Who is this really? No, it's Tony Robbins. I was like, okay, well, great to hear from you. He said, I've heard you've been studying breathing for like 50 years. I said, yep, I've never had a regular job. I wouldn't know what else to do. And so he said, I just want to pick your brain if it's all right. I said, hell yeah, you can pick anything you like on me. And we spent a couple of hours that first time, about an hour or so on the phone. And then we started meeting on Skype, and a very good lesson, because he's a good example. I mean, here's somebody who's done a lot of work on himself, no doubt about that, and is a high performer. And I love working with people like that, because they've done a lot of work on themselves. You just give them a little tweak, a little refinement, and they parlay that into a huge advantage. And so one of the things, my first real training session with him was on Skype. And I had him practicing a couple of things. And every time he breathed in, he tensed his jaw. And you could even see, you know, people doing this thing, and you can see the temples and stuff when they're biting. And he was doing that while he breathed. And I'm going, Tony, and I can share this because he's made it public already, but I said, you know, what's the first thing you want to get, or what's the thing most important? And at the time it was blood pressure. And so, okay, that's a no-brainer. Breathing for blood pressure, anybody can lower their blood pressure with breathing. Anybody can do that. So that's easy. So let's start there. And one of the first things I noticed was that every time he inhaled, because of his passion, because of his enthusiasm, he put so much of himself into everything, he was putting unnecessary effort into his breathing. And he was actually tensing muscles in his jaw while he was inhaling. Wow. So I just said, look, you're raising your blood pressure when you do that. If you want to know how to raise your blood pressure, that's how you can do it. Yeah. So just get conscious about relaxing your jaw while you breathe. And he lowered his blood pressure by 15 points. It's never gone back up.
Wow.
So, you know, just one little tweak, one little observation, one little refinement, you know, and that's one specific, but there's a lot of other. You just start observing the breath in yourself and in others, and certain things just start to get really obvious because people just never paid attention to it. When you're angry, when you're in pain, the last thing you focus on is how you're breathing. You're focusing on who you're angry at. You're focusing on the pain that you're having. And so as soon as you expand your consciousness a little bit to include some breath awareness, now something's possible that can never be possible before. And when you actually breathe consciously in those moments, you're doing something you've never done before in that moment. And so something is possible that could never be possible. So in one level, breathing is a trick. It's just a way to divert energy from where it usually goes. And that often just makes certain things dissolve, you know, certain problems we think we got to figure out how to solve. They just fall away when you put energy and attention into your breath. Yeah. Somehow that other stuff just starts to like take care of itself very naturally.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. Oh, thank you for sharing the Tony story as well. I went to see Tony in 2018, me and 13,000 other people, but we went to go and see Tony, and he had a profound effect on my life. I ended up quitting my corporate job of 15 years that weekend, and me and my girlfriend traveled all around the world. So big thank you to Tony for that, and it worked out really well. So very powerful. Dan, I'm going to jump in, if it's okay, to a couple of questions from my audience that they've sent us, and see if we can answer some of these. Is breath hold after inhale better to improve lung capacity? So again, there's another question here. How do you improve lung capacity? So maybe you can combine those two together.
Yeah. If you take in a deep breath and then hold it, try to sip in a little more, relax, stretch, use movement while you're holding your breath, twist, and you find you can pull in a little more. You relax a little more, you twist and stretch, and you can find, so yeah, you can, and if you hold your breath full, you know, you kind of, it helps to increase lung capacity. Okay. But if you're just increasing lung capacity by itself, I mean, you know, can have benefits. I suggest that people practice breath holding after the exhale first. So, because there's a natural pause there, And nature put that pause there. So the natural breathing pattern is inhale, exhale, pause. Mm. Inhale, exhale, pause. Natural breathing isn't inhale, pause, exhale. Mm. That's something we do deliberately or consciously, or it's caused by fear or pain. So when you take a breath and you hold it, you can be not realizing it, but fighting off some unconscious stuff and actually sending that stuff further out of your awareness. Mm-hmm. But when you settle into a pause after the exhale, it's a natural pause. Nature put it there. And then you just practice extending it and mm-hmm. getting comfortable with a longer and longer pause. Then when you practice a breath hold at the inhale, you got much more potential. So mm-hmm. I practice breath hold on an empty lung. And then when I do breath holding on a full lung, I can really go, right? So, and so it's a matter of relaxing into a hold. And it's very difficult to relax when you're, you know, if you relax, all the air comes out.
Yeah.
So when all the air comes out, then you just don't breathe in and right. wait and continue to relax and pause and build up your breath holding capacity at the end of the exhale, and you'll automatically improve it on the other end at the end of the inhale. So, wonderful. But you know, you do both. They're both are very useful. Both are very important. I would just start with the pause after the exhale. It's more natural. And you, if you look at the pain response and the fear response, that's where the breath gets trapped, is up here, like, and it's not till the breath, the pain goes away that the breath is released. Or the same thing with fear or panic. Like, and when the fear passes, that exhale happens. So you can actually lock pain and fear in your body by holding your breath up there at the top of your inhale and not realize you're even doing that.
Wow.
So more awareness, more gentleness, more patience, and start with what's natural. And there is a natural pause after the exhale, and you want to make that a comfort zone. That's like a coming home. You inhale, you exhale, you just took a cosmic journey, and now you come home and you want to rest there before you take the next breath. And so I would suggest anybody interested in breath holding practices, begin there.
Mm, so. Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. That was absolutely fantastic. Wonderful answer. Somebody said, I would like to know more about the proper way to breathe and brace during physical activities like weightlifting and physical work.
Yeah. Study anatomy. Look where the diaphragm is anchored to the spine. Look at Carl Stowe, one of my early teachers, taught Simbic, the Stowe method of breathing coordination. And he had a beautiful model of the breathing mechanism as a ball and socket joint. So the socket is a rib cage and the ball is a diaphragm. Mm-hmm. And he worked with opera singers, emphysema patients, theater people who need to project their voice and so on. And that was his, he was a choral director. And so, you know, that side stitch that runners get, that's mm-hmm. because the diaphragm is not, it's rubbing on the lower ribs and it's not tucked up into the rib cage where it belongs. And so by exhaling, the diaphragm can rise up higher into the rib cage, and then you don't get that side stitch. Okay. But if you're into that mechanical weightlifting and so on, you need to study mechanics. You need to study muscle connections, joint connections, link, and it'll get clear why you would want to inhale at certain points during a movement and when you want to exhale and how to brace. And, you know, posture is really important. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to brace, but you don't want to have the structure in alignment or the structure's aligning, but you're not bracing properly, that's not my specialty. Mm-hmm. Mike White at breathing.com, Brian McKenzie, there are some guys out there that's they zero in on that and they've got it down. They really got it well. But we need to educate ourselves anatomically and structurally to make sense out of the breathing practices we do, if you're doing them for that purpose. Yeah.
Wonderful. Dan, any advice on hiccups?
Yeah. When I was a kid, I don't know, people think hiccups are so damn funny. I hated them. They were painful. It was horrible. I hated the hiccups. And so I was motivated to do anything, not to have hiccups. And I finally, when I was in the military, and I was hired by civilians, Maryland and Delaware State Police and Fire Department, to train EMTs, emergency medical technicians. And they gave me a lesson plans and a manual. And there was a chapter in there on respiratory physiology and anatomy and so on. And there were all these little sidebar, cute little factoids just to make the book interesting. And one of them was, you know, what is a hiccup? Mm-hmm. And like, it had never occurred to me to like, you know, understand, well, what exactly is a hiccup? Yeah. It's a spasm of the diaphragm followed by sudden closing of the glottis. So when breathing is controlled by the normal neural pathways, this glottis opens up because it knows we're breathing. But if you have a random spasm of the diaphragm, this didn't get the message, and it just slams shut because you don't want food going down into your lungs. And so when I understood that, so it's a spasm of the diaphragm caused by, followed by the sudden closing of the glottis because it wasn't in the loop neurologically, and it just a protection slammed shut. So all I have to do is consciously relax my throat or consciously breathe in when the hiccup wants to happen. And that's how I healed my hiccup. So instead of having So I just invited that. So that's what my hiccups look like and sound like now. They sound like, and I'll have one or maybe two, but that's about it.
Okay. So I never thought I'd say this, but I'm looking forward to getting hiccups again now so I can practice that.
And play with it. Right. Yeah. Play with relaxing your throat and consciously inhaling at the moment that the spasm in the diaphragm happens. And then the hiccup takes on, it's actually a lovely rush. It's like a momentary rush that feels really good. Fantastic. Compared to when I used to just, my body, the pain, and it was just bothered me that people thought hiccups were damn funny. There was nothing funny about hiccups with me when I was a kid.
Last question for you, Dan. If somebody's watching or listening to this right now and they've listened to this hour that we've had, what one thing could they do immediately afterwards to help them get on the path to healing and breath health? Is it a book? Is it a breath exercise? Is it a website? Where would you tell people to do straight after this to help them heal?
Everything begins in awareness. Everything begins with consciousness. So the first step, the last step, and the continuous step is to be conscious of your breathing. Be aware of the breath. Start there. And that means you don't have to breathe in any special way. You're just paying attention to the breath, tuning into it, sensing it, listening to it, feeling it, watching it. And then you start to play with it, because play is nature's way of learning. So then you just start to practice anything that seems interesting to you. Start there and keep going, right? So two main aspects of breath work. Breath awareness, where all you're doing is what the Buddha did. Just being the witness of your breath, the witness of your body, the witness of feelings and sensations, the witness of thoughts that come and go. Develop that witness in you. And use the breath to develop it. So you make the breathing the object of your meditation. Don't control it. Don't breathe in any special way. Just practice being with it, watching it, sensing it, feeling it, allowing it to come and go by itself. And that's the first step. And the next step is you just have to play with your breath in some interesting way. And two things, yawning and sighing, those aren't really breathing techniques. They're natural responses. A yawn comes up. And so make yourself yawn and experience what it feels like. And practice yawning and play with yawning and play with a sigh of relief. A sigh of relief is an inhale that's twice as big as your average breath. And that's what produces what we call that sigh of relief. So start with sighing and yawning because they're not really techniques. They're natural. Play with what nature already gave you. Begin to observe your breathing. How are you breathing when you wake up in the morning? How are you breathing when you're stuck in traffic? How are you breathing when someone is insulting you? How are you breathing when you're having an orgasm? How are you breathing when you're trying to solve a math problem? Bring awareness to your breath. That's the first step. And the next step will be guided by your breath itself, will be guided by your inner wisdom, by your own body's intelligence.
Yes.
And if you don't have any solid idea of what to practice, then start with the triangle breath. Inhale, exhale, pause, and grow that triangle. Make the inhales longer, make the exhales longer, make the pauses longer, morph the triangle in different shapes. And you're just experimenting and playing with the breath, noticing what muscles you use. You know, it's exploration in the beginning. It's like on a first date, you don't start to manipulate the other person. You're just getting to know them. So when you're, if you're starting off in breath work, don't start by manipulating your breath, get to know it. And then what you do will have a little more natural wisdom to it, and your intuition will open, and you'll be guided to a particular book or a particular teacher, a particular technique, and you just keep following that, and you're on the path.
Oh, Dan, I'm sorry. I know we've overran, but I've got one last very quick question for you, which is there any benefit in screaming into a pillow? Have you ever done any therapy around that?
Yeah. I was Arthur Janoff, Primal Scream. It came about at the same time that rebirthing was invented. Yes, there's benefit to that. But when I'm screaming, I'm also creating back pressure. And so that back pressure can stuff very subtle things, press it further into my body. And it's pretty inefficient. It's effective, but not so efficient. And so when it wants to occur naturally, hell, don't get in the way of it. Just go for it. But not as an artificial way. Okay, I'm going to like scream and beat in a pillow for a few minutes. Well, it could be an interesting experiment, you know. But as far as efficiency, permanent benefit, long-time benefit, whatever I scream out, it's kind of like a pressure cooker. The pressure got so bad that I had to scream, but then I only screamed enough so the pressure went down. I never got rid of all the pressure. It just went down enough so it's not bothering me. I've still got it there. Yes. And that's where the breath comes in, and it cleans up that stuff. That's not just, I'm carrying a certain amount of stress and one thing happens and it triggers my and then that brings me back down to my baseline stress level again. It didn't do anything except vent the extra that was too much for my system. Meanwhile, I'm still carrying as much as my system can carry, and I haven't healed anything really. But it's useful. I have to say, I have encouraged people to do that.
Yes.
When I sense that it wants to happen by itself and it's not artificial. But even artificial things can work. So...
No, wonderful.
That's probably a non-answer of an answer.
No. It's because I feel the need to do it, but it's just to get the energy out. And then, but you're right. It doesn't address the underlying
issues.
Combine
the breath with it. So, you know, you very constantly, and then so just combine the breathing with the shouting.
Yes.
And now you got the best of both worlds.
Yes.
And then gradually you can move towards just breathing, because you find that the shouting, it's okay, it's fun, it feels good, but it's a temporary kind of low-level solution. We want to teach our system a better way to handle that stuff.
Wonderful.
And the breath is a better way.
Thank you. Dan, thank you for everything that you do. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Where can people find you? Where do you want me to direct to them? I'll put some links below for you so I can direct them to your Breathing Festival website.
Yeah, thank you. Breathmastery.com. Dan Brulé Official on Instagram. And Dan Brulé Breath Mastery on Facebook.
Wonderful. I'll put those links below, guys. So please click down below and go and find Dan on those places as well. And Dan, thank you again. It's been absolutely wonderful talking to you. It really, really has. So thank you. And guys, we'll see you on the next Breathcast. Thanks, everybody. Take care. Bye, Dan. Okay, thanks for watching. Take a deep breath. Thanks for watching our breathcast. I hope you enjoyed the guest that we just had. Just a couple of quick messages. Thank you for sticking through to the end. Really appreciate it. If you enjoyed that and you haven't subscribed, please click that subscribe button and leave us a question or a comment, because it helps the Google algorithm. And it also means that we can interact and other people get involved and answer questions. So leave us a little question. That would be incredible. At the start, I mentioned our other YouTube channel, Hypnotherapy Unleashed. If you haven't gone over there yet, we've got a whole host of exercises in the world of hypnotherapy that can help you with addictions, anxiety, depression, and a whole other range of things that hypnotherapy can support with. So please go over there and you might find some real value over on that channel. And we're really trying to grow that community at the moment. So if you know somebody that could benefit from that and you wanted to share that, that would be really appreciated. On Instagram, you can follow me at takeadeepbreath.co.uk, and we've got regular content there. And finally, in the link below, we have a breath store. So what is that? So we have taken some of our top videos. I say we, it's me. I've taken some of our top videos and converted them into an MP3 format. And for just a couple of dollars, $4 or $5, you can go to this little store. You can go through PayPal or through your debit or credit cards, all secure, legit. And you can buy one of our MP3s. And that way you're supporting the channel. But not only that, you get to keep the MP3 forever. There's no ads, there's no anything else going on. So you can listen to it on your phone, on the aeroplane when there's no signal. And that's yours to keep forever. So yeah, that's down below. And that's our breath store, which has got, I think, 8 or 9 different breathing exercises on there. We're adding more as we go. And that's it. So yeah, so thank you so much from me. And we hope to see you on the next exercise or the next breath cast. And if you're finishing this right now and you're thinking, got a few minutes spare, not sure what to do, then try one of the breathing exercises. Box breathing is a lovely way just to help slow things down and relax us. You could do some alternate nostril breathing. Just go and have a look at the channel, look at the playlists and pick something for you. Give yourself a little treat. And we will see you on the next video. Thank you very much. Cheers.